Welcome to Our Town, Bob Snedden. Right now we are visiting with Lisa Utz, and she's the Director of Special Programs at Sisaw School District. Welcome to Our Town.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your having me here.
Now, when we say special programs at the school district, what does that refer to?
There are quite a few programs at Sisaw District that encompass a lot of supplemental supportive education programs. For example, special education is probably our largest program, but we also have title programs which support extra reading and math support, especially at the elementary and middle levels. We also have special programs for homeless students or students who qualify under that McKinney-Vento grant, which is also a title grant. It gets a little confusing, but if you just imagine that there are a lot of federal programs that support that supplemental educational piece, that stuff that's just the extra inch for students who may struggle or may have disabilities, learning barriers of some kind.
How long have you been with the school district?
Wow, I have been with Sisaw School District since 2002, I want to say. So is that
21 years.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
My first few years, I was a classified employee, and then I stopped working for a period of time to go back to school and get my teaching certificate and my special education endorsement, because I found that that was where I needed to be. I didn't know I was meant to be a special education teacher until I started here.
Is that a fulfilling thing?
I love it. It is very hard, very demanding in terms of all of the extra legal stuff and all that. But as far as the teaching part and the support for students and the interactions with students, it is you can't beat it. It's the best.
I kind of look at it such as like a risk and reward, a high risk from the standpoint of high work. You got a lot of things to do, but there's generally, it's very rewarding, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. And it's nice to see our alumni. Some of our alumni have come back and are employees with us now, which is really cool. But also, you know, just running across somebody in the store or even, you know, sometimes over in the valley in Eugene, you run across a ex-student and alumni of Sisaw and you go, right on. That's awesome.
So it's nice to see the kids who, without an extra hand to guide them and give them a boost. You know, what happened 50 years ago to kids like this?
There were institutions or no programs at all.
Yeah.
You know, really, over the course of what's called IDEA or the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which provided all the federal law around special education. Without that or the title federal laws, we wouldn't have these programs.
And a lot of these have come from federal and state mandates to say, hey, we need to offer these services.
And to be honest, a lot of it came from parent advocacy, too.
Yeah.
So parents advocating for what their kids need.
Let's talk about the end product, graduation and dropout rates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you gave me some figures earlier, and from 2011, 2012, I see the graph going up, but 2020, 2021 school year, things kind of halted. And then drop back down.
Yep. Long story short, part of that is COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to say that it's entirely COVID because we really tried to push the dial on whatever we could in whatever way we could during that COVID period of time, especially with students with disabilities. There's also a weird tracking mechanism, a weird thing that happened during that COVID time for re-enrollment. So some kids look like they dropped out, but they had just gone off to an online school that didn't register them as an Oregon student. So kind of losing that amount.
Right. And I'm looking at state benchmarks because these go in hand in hand with that previous graph.
Yep.
State benchmarks are they have testing requirements on every student, no matter who has testing, and they do it to establish a benchmark for each certain age groups and for certain topics and stuff
exactly.
Like that. That too was pretty high up until. Well, actually, about 2015 and things. What happened back in 2014, 2015 to cause these numbers to really plummet?
So whenever you look at data and numbers, I never like to look at just surface level or make one assumption about what the data means. But in this case, there was something that impacted every student's test scores in the state that year, and that was smarter balanced assessments. It was a brand new way to assess kids. Pretty much across the state, there were cries for, oh, don't do this to us, ODE, right? The Oregon Department of Education. People didn't like it. The first year saw a lot of scores plunge. And then over time, as teachers and students got used to the new testing format, we did better. And so then you started to slowly see things inch up. But then all of a sudden, COVID hit. And then we weren't testing at all. because you couldn't do that private testing. There are a lot of stringent requirements around that state testing. Mm-hmm. Kids can't get any help at all, for one, which really impacts students with disabilities, just saying. It also requires, you know, only certain tools be used by the kids, and a lot of them are digital, a lot of them are online only, and that was a really big shift for a lot of kids to not have paper pencil. And a lot of us like paper pencil anyway. So that, in my mind, when I look at that, at first I saw Sayusla's numbers and I was like, yep, we really got to dig into what happened there. And as soon as I started digging, I saw, oh, it was a statewide mandate that changed the rules of the game for everybody testing.
So everybody had to deal with the changes there. Let's talk about the students in the special special programs themselves. How do parents feel overall? You mentioned that a lot of the changes over the years have come because parents have provided feedback and said, hey, we need more services. Has that been the case in Oregon and at Sayusla, do you think?
Yeah, I think parents' voices are always loud and proud, which is how they should be about their kids, right? I do know that ODE every 3 years puts out a parent survey. I don't get to have any hand in that. It's just kind of those are the questions. So in a way, it's kind of nice because it gives us a really outside view. Parents can answer however they want to
it's
ODE.
It's an objective survey.
It's outside of – we don't even pick the questions. It's just about how involved do you feel your school district has provided you as a parent? How much involvement has your school district provided you? And over the years, we've done pretty well, I would say, especially when you look at the, you know, the different state benchmark, what they expect us to meet in terms of parent responses. And it's, you know, since 2011-12, it's just slowly kind of gone up and, you know, either met or maybe slightly didn't meet that state benchmark. But overall, it's trending all the way up. So I'm pleased. That makes me happy.
If you look at the last two school years, of which you have figures for, and you don't have figures yet for the 2022-2023.
Right.
So you go back to years starting in 2018, 2019, you skipped a year because of that C word. But 2021, 2022, you actually, Sayusla parents rated the local programs above the state average those 2 years.
Exactly. So that's really reassuring in knowing that that communication piece, that involvement piece, parents are feeling good about. That's really important to us. Yeah.
This is Our Town. I'm Bob Sun, visiting with Lisa Utz right now, and she's the Special Programs Director at Sayusla School District, dealing with kids primarily who have special needs, but any kid that needs a boost or a little extra program includes TAG, the Talented Gifted.
Includes that, yep.
Yeah, but kids who need maybe not English as their main language. English language. So any kid that needs something else to help them excel, and a lot of people think about, well, special programs, special education. That makes the primary time focus that you do.
Yes. Yeah. Although it kind of depends. Different years we have larger groups of kids that come through. And in a small district, one or two additional kids can really impact the numbers that you have that you're serving and providing service to. So it's all individual, really.
Yeah. Several years ago, I know there was a descriptor called mainstreaming. I think you've changed that a little bit. It's called a less restrictive environment.
I'm going to tell you that's actually all that is education speak, right?
Yes.
It's education language. So the difference is, okay, mainstreaming was what we in special education called many years ago when we were trying to, quote unquote, push students in to a regular education classroom rather than having all of the special education students separated out in a separate classroom.
Right.
That mainstream terminology has morphed into what's now called inclusion. So it's a little bit different. It's not about pushing in. It's about those students taking their rightful place as students that belong in that learning community, right? So that's where that inclusion model versus mainstreaming has kind of evolved. The least restrictive environment, what that is that's dependent on the IEP team. The IEP team sits down. Individual Education Plan.
Okay.
When a student is eligible for special education services, each student annually is given an updated IEP or a plan that addresses what their individual goals are for education. So one kid may only need some help in math, but not reading. One kid may need help in almost every subject. Another kid might just need help with mobility and with getting around and being able to access their education. So in that IEP, part of what we decide every year is what's called placement or least restrictive environment. And it's not about restriction in terms of pulling them into a separate space. It's about what does that individual kid need to grow and learn. So I'll give you an example. One kid thrives when they're around their peers of all kinds, thrives when they're thrown all kinds of information, even if they don't know what that word means. As long as they're hearing it, they're a little sponge, they're going to soak it in. And maybe 2 to 3 years down the road, they're going to spit it back out again and know it, right?
And the socialization and being involved in other things.
100%.
Right. And that was kind of the intention of mainstreaming.
It was.
But didn't that sometimes almost force you into the situation of putting all kids a one-size-fits-all type thing?
It did. And that's where that least restrictive environment comes in, because the team as a whole can decide. This kiddo has a lot of anxiety, for example. Mm-hmm. They get really uncomfortable in big social situations. A large classroom full of kids is really hard on them. The whole IEP team, the parents included, and the students, if we can get them there. Students don't always go to their meetings, but the whole team decides together whether or not a separate placement, a smaller placement, more pullout where they're getting one-on-one attention with additional time with general ed peers, you know, however that works.
Maybe you take full integration in the classroom in small bites.
Yeah, and grow it over time sometimes. Yeah, it depends. And their behavior tells us. You know, people say behavior is communication. Well, a lot of times kids communicate in a lot of different ways, and stress and anxiety and frustration can sometimes come out in aggressive ways or in self kind of harming ways. And we have to really keep an eye on that. And you don't want to push a kid too far before they get to a point of that, and keep them comfortable enough so they can learn.
Lisa Utz is a special programs director of Sisal School District. And I've wasted time. I've taken up most of my budgeted time for this, but real quick before you go, a lot of attention over the last several months has been on students who are aging out. Now, one pretty high profile case of that this past year, had one student who was going to turn 21 over the summer and did. And according to the state rules and the district policies, not only are they supposed to go to an adult type program or transitional program, but the state doesn't provide any funding for that student at the school district level. But you've been working on a program, because it's not just one student. You're looking at several more over the next several years. So it's a growing challenge. So what have you come up with really quick?
So I've made some good connections with adult services. I think one of the problems is being a rural small community, we get left behind a little bit. And that's across Oregon, because this happens in way Eastern Oregon. This happens, you know, all across, where the bigger cities get most of the services. But I've been able to connect with some people who really know what they're doing and are really putting together some good connections for us. It's a small start. We have a local group called Allies by the Sea, who works with adults up in Yahats and South Beach, and they're expanding some of their programming down into Florence. If you happen to be a parent of or an adult with a disability, please keep an eye out for the flyers. They're going to be setting up some online trainings and webinars. It's going to be a great connection. That's a start. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to do a lot more than that, though.
All right. Lisa Utz, the Director of Special Programs at Sisal School District. Lisa, thank you for coming and visiting with us on our town.
Thank you very much
and
for having me.
You're all enthused and excited because the kids are back in the classroom.
Yay! They're here. It's been a quiet summer, which has been nice too, but having them back means everything.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for Our Town this month. Join us for the October edition next month for Coast Radio's Our Town.